Welcome back to the Dialogue Studio. This podcast series is hosted by the Ikeda Center for Peace, Learning, and Dialogue. In it, we explore the transformational practice of dialogue and why it is important, especially in this current moment. In these episodes, you will hear from individuals from all walks of life sharing what dialogue means to them and how they are practicing it in their daily lives. We will also introduce our founder, Daisaku Ikeda's philosophy of dialogue and the various approaches and strategies we practice here at the center. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us again in the Dialogue Studio today. It's so hard to believe that so much has happened since our last episode. And just in the last few weeks, we've seen one heartbreaking shooting after another in America. Here at the Ikeda Center, we've been deeply reflecting on what it is that we can do at this time. We came across an essay by Mr. Ikeda titled Our Power for Peace, from David Krieger's book Hope in a Dark Time, Reflections on Humanity's Future. In it, he shares a perspective that I would love to share with everybody today. He says, in the end, peace will not be realized by politicians signing treaties. True and lasting peace will only be realized by forging life-to-life bonds of trust and friendship among the world's people. Human solidarity is built by opening our hearts to each other. This is the power of dialogue. So inspired by this, we at the center decided that first and foremost, we will recommit to the path of dialogue, which is why I'm so excited for today's timely episode where I will be speaking with two incredible individuals from our Ikeda Center Youth Committee, Cameron Moroz and Saloni Dev, about their dialogue perspectives and experiences and the impact dialogue can have on our society right now. Saloni is a faculty at Tufts University School of Medicine, and her research interests are in public mental health. Cam just graduated with a master's in psychology and will be starting his new chapter as a school psychologist here in Boston. So with that, let's meet Cam and Saloni. Well, hello, Cam and Saloni. I'm so, so excited to have you both on the Dialogue Studio today. I was just reflecting on the many, many incredible dialogues and conversations we've had over the years with both of you individually and then in a group at the Ikeda Center. So I was just extra excited to have you both in the same space. So I thought if I can invite you both to just introduce yourselves. So your name, where you're from, what you do for work, and just because there's so much happening right now in our world, I was just curious what's been on your minds lately. So yeah, whoever wants to kick us off.
Hi, everyone. My name is Saloni Dev. I grew up in India and moved to the US about 7 years ago. And now I call Boston home. And I am a faculty at Tufts University School of Medicine. My work involves conducting research on public mental health and teaching in a master's in public health program. And with this, I would also like to share a side note that the views I express today do not represent that of my employer. And one thing that has been on my mind lately is growth. As it pertains to myself, I should clarify. And growth, well, physical growth, mental growth, and of also social growth. And I in the past few days, I've just been reflecting on, you know, it has been about 7 years since I left home, moved across countries, and just reflecting on that experience, how much I have grown, and the things I do today that I would not have imagined doing 7 years ago, or the way I am, I definitely would not have imagined my life to be this way. And, you know, growing a family here. So that's the social aspect of my growth, and definitely physically. And maybe I need to work out more this summer. But yeah, that's about me.
Thanks, Saloni. My name is Cam. I am from Boston, and I am studying school psychology in graduate school right now. I have my official graduation in 1 week, and I'm starting work as a school psychologist in Boston in August, which I'm really excited for. It's very interesting, Saloni, that you mentioned you have been reflecting a lot on growth, because that also is something that has been on my mind. I have been reflecting on how much my growth is impacted by my beliefs on what I'm capable of. And I think I can really restrict myself in telling myself, you know, I'm not advocating for less sleep, but I recently had experiences where I didn't get as much sleep as I would like. And before I was like, oh, it's impossible for me to still be focused the next day or have good energy. But being able to still do that broke down those previous ideas on what is possible, and how with that spirit of challenge, there's so many new frontiers that can be opened. And I'm excited to continue to seek to grow in different ways and not to be constrained by what I believe I can't do.
Wow. Thank you both. I wasn't expecting such a powerful opening. And I already have so many questions. But first of all, congratulations, Cam, for this new chapter. And actually, Saloni, you are sort of starting a new chapter in your life too. And I was thinking, oh, wow, when I first met you both, you were in different places, but now you're both in the same sort of institute, which is really interesting. And I just made that connection. And thank you both for sharing about growth. And I think it's such an interesting time to think about growth, especially as we're navigating like different worlds. And yeah, just even with the time of the year, you know, like the trees are starting to bloom in Boston. And I did have a follow-up question. You know, this podcast, of course, is all about dialogue, and we're going to talk about dialogue today, just in terms of your own personal experiences and in your fields of work. And I was just wondering if, in thinking about growth, like how has dialogue, whether with yourself or with other people in your life, has that sort of helped you grow more? Or like, how do you use dialogue to grow?
Well, I would say that I don't think any of my growth, especially in like personal growth and mental growth that I was talking about, would have been possible without the dialogue component or the aspect. It definitely involved dialogues with myself and with others. And just being able to engage meaningfully with close friends or people I trusted, confiding in them what was bothering me or what was acting as a barrier or anything that was a challenge to me advancing towards what I was aspiring for, that was such a crucial component. And of course, the dialogues with myself were a lot more challenging than I would have hoped for. And they have evolved over time, I would say. But also my dialogue or conversations with others really impacted the kind of conversations I had with myself. And if I would have left, I would have been left with myself, I think the dialogues or the growth would look very different. And I'm happy with, you know, connecting with others and being able to get their feedback, get their ideas, bounce my ideas off them, and being able to lead a very fulfilling everyday life, I would say.
Yeah, I really appreciate, Saloni, you adding this other dimension of how dialogue goes well beyond just with another person, but how we can have dialogue with ourselves. And you're helping me expand my perception of what dialogue is. Like, dialogue allows me to go deeper. I feel like it's very limiting, like you said, to be on my own. And I feel that there's some barrier to following a thought or building on an idea or processing an experience when it's on my own. But when there's somebody else that I can dialogue with, it opens up so much new territory. And one aspect of that is I feel like I learn more about myself through dialoguing with others, which is counterintuitive. And, you know, you think about therapy. Therapy is a dialogue where engaging with someone that's a really good listener and is able to reflect a lot of things back. And I benefited so much from a therapeutic setting, being able to process experiences. So there's something so powerful about having somebody else who's present and who wants to engage intentionally in that space to understand. And that allows me to know myself better, that allows for so much growth, and is the best way for me to grow in so many areas.
That is so beautiful, Cam. I am just, well, adding to that, I am the person who like overthinks and overanalyzes, and one small thought can drastically change into something that I'm heading towards doom or something. And especially in those cases, I feel that when I engage with others, it's definitely a process for me to learn more about myself, how I view things, what my fears are, how my past experiences are impacting my perception of the world today. And also, I feel, again, Cam, to your point, while we are engaging with others, you know, in different capacities, and I also have a psychology background, and so I totally resonate with, you know, what you said about therapeutic settings and certain attributes of people that make it so conducive to engage with them. I have two friends whom I very proudly call my coaches. Like anything that ever goes wrong in my life, I just call them up and I cry to them, and they are just calmly able to listen to me and reflect my thoughts back. And I think I've learned so much from that process, that when I am in that role, when some other friend is calling me, I'm really able to practice those skills and be there for someone else that I really care about. So I think this is just to bolster your point on how dialogue can also help us learn more about ourselves.
Wow, thank you so much, Cam and Saloni. Yeah, I love what you both shared. And Saloni, you reminded me of an experience I had driving in my car with a friend, and I was telling her all about my struggles and about my life, and I was like really stuck in this particular thing. And she just said to me, "Lillian, you have such a distorted view of yourself." And I remember thinking, like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "I don't see you that way at all." You know, and it was sort of this moment of like, oh my gosh, how I perceive myself is of course important, but also can be so rooted, as you said earlier, Cam, in sort of this very incorrect perception of who I really am. And I was just thinking how fortunate we are to have these spaces and have friends, you know, each other and the friends you mentioned, Saloni, to be able to engage in that, you know, self-reflection and self-growth and improvement together. And then I think about just all the different types of engagements and interactions that we see or maybe personally experience in different parts of our lives that maybe are not as positive or that sometimes may be harmful or painful. And so one of the questions that I know we wanted to discuss today is there's so many different types of interactions in our world, whether through social media or just like media consumption. What do you think are the current ways that people are engaging with one another in our society? And maybe what are some ways you think we can change those ways of engagement? Like, what are some engagements that you've witnessed yourself, whether through your work or in your personal life, that you feel we can do different, you know?
One thing I've noticed for sure is how everything is so polarized. Like, everything often is put into silos, where it's so easy to label someone as X, Y, or Z, and that totally encompasses all their views and perspectives, and oh, no more, there's no need for me to ask any more questions because I already know everything that they're going to say. And maybe I'll wait for a space till they're done talking, and then I'll say what I want to say. And I fall into that way of judging often, and I think that that's really challenging and an aspect of the way our society is structured, with the way news is presented, the way events are portrayed in the media as being on one extreme or the other extreme. And so I think that it makes it a lot more challenging to engage in dialogue and meet in some middle ground, because those extremes are so far from each other, and the tendency is often to want to convince the other person or change them and not to understand them.
I would just totally agree with Cam. And when I was thinking about this question, I took the liberty to break it down into two parts. And the first thing that I thought about was, are we even engaging with one another? Before I even think about how we are engaging, I think it's important to think about if we are engaging. I feel the answer to that question is yes, but also no. We are engaging with the people that we surround ourselves with. And that has been narrowed down a lot by definitely the pandemic, because, you know, initially we were not able to engage in social activities. We were within our homes or within our immediate family. So that definitely narrowed down if we were engaging with one another. And then there's this concept or bubble of ideologies or identities that I think make us interact with people with whom we share those identities or ideologies. And I clearly remember instances, especially from the beginning of the pandemic, and maybe it has changed now, hopefully it has changed now, when individuals would refuse to engage with one another if they knew that their opinions were different from one another. I saw Twitter and Instagram posts on how if they invited someone on dinner and if they got to know that their maybe political ideologies were different, they would immediately ask them to leave, which I totally respect. I mean, it's very challenging to be in the same environment with a person who does not share your values. But then I also could not help but think about how are we denying any human connection just because our identities are different? And how is that different from people we label as evil or, you know, bad people? Or, yeah, so that was always on my mind. And that's also a very long answer to the first part of the question that I broke it down into. And then, how are we engaging with one another? Even when we are engaging with our family members, friends, as Cam mentioned, I think other than the medium we use to engage, the biggest factor is our intention of engaging. I think it has been to put our point across, to prove that we are right, to validate our own experiences or opinions, which again, I don't see anything wrong with that. But I think the purpose of engaging with others is to also learn about others. It is to listen and process and then respond.
I so resonate with all those things.
Same. I just read this today. There's a book that the center published called Peacebuilding Through Dialogue. Mr. Ikeda wrote a foreword to this book. And in it, he says that in order to achieve mutually enriching, deeply connecting dialogue, we need to overcome the divisions within our own hearts that make us unconsciously categorize people and rank their value on that basis. We need to be aware of the danger of categorizing people into such simplistic binaries as good and bad, us and them, and friend and foe. Such an approach is one of the deep drivers of conflict. And so, yeah, what you both shared reminded me of this, like how even unconsciously we do that when we meet people. And sort of a side question, I imagine, even though I know you're both such dialogic and wonderful people, and I always enjoy having dialogue with you too, but I imagine that there have been moments when you've even felt yourself like wanting to do that and feeling that resistance. Like, what do you do in those moments to push through or challenge that feeling? Do you kind of pause and step away from the dialogue, or is there something you try to tell yourself that allows you to sort of continue to engage? Yeah, I was just wondering if that has come up at all in the last year or two.
Oh, it comes up every day.
That's encouraging to know, Cam, that you go through that, because I feel like you're always so embracing of everybody who enters your space.
Thank you. I think my answer is two-pronged. One, I often, in my experience, the energy state and intentionality that I go into an interaction with is so impactful on how that dialogue interaction goes. So it's almost like the quality of it is determined before it even starts. Where if I'm, you know, I get home from work and I have 25 minutes to run to the grocery store and get six things and then run back, and I, you know, run into someone at the grocery store that asks a question, I might say a really quick answer and then boom, try to leave and then go do my list. And I'm not in a state at all to engage in a dialogue. I'm so rushed. My mind is completely on the things I need to do. And my intention is to move as quickly as I can. And so before even engaging with that person, the quality of that dialogue has essentially already been determined. And that happens in so many other facets of my life. If I'm really anxious about something at work and I see a coworker, it's hard for me to really listen to them and not be caught up in my own worries, my own to-do list. So it's really hard. But I would say, in response to your question, Lillian, about what to do if I'm in a situation where I am frazzled and I want to re-engage in the moment, one thing that helps move the needle in the right direction is pausing. So pausing and resisting the urge to just fill space with whatever pops into my mind. Sometimes one breath, one pause can make a shift in the quality of the conversation.
Wow. I would just like to acknowledge that this dialogue is helping me learn more about myself. And thanks for sharing that, Cam. I share that experience, and probably I wasn't aware of, I mean, I was aware of it, but not consciously, or was not consciously thinking about it. Because even I can think of so many instances where the idea in my head is that to meaningfully engage with someone, I have to spend an extended amount of time with them, which I do not have. I have to work on my paper, or I need to work on preparing for class, or I want some me time. I cannot engage with others. And that has definitely been a barrier to engaging in dialogue. I don't know the solution to it for now. Or maybe blocking time on my calendar to engage with others is an effective way to deal with it, for starters. But yeah, and also, another insight that I have around you know, when I myself am not consciously engaging or not willing to engage in dialogue, is around difficult conversations. For example, you know, I'm very close to my family, but sometimes when I have to talk about something difficult, I try to avoid it at all costs. And I just act as if everything is fine, nothing is wrong, or then nothing, you know, there's an elephant in the room that no one can see. And in those instances, I think I can acknowledge that I am at least a little bit proud of myself for pushing myself to initiate that dialogue, because I know that the longer I push it off, it's not going to help. So even though it's painful, even though it's difficult, it definitely pushes out of my comfort zone. But I do have the awareness that it is extremely important for me to engage in that dialogue with them or with anyone else for that matter, to grow.
Yeah. Wow. I echo what you said, Celine. I'm learning so much about myself too. This dialogue, you said something earlier that made me realize, oh, that's why I don't respond to text messages, you know, because I just, you know, I feel like I can't, you know, give my whole self and then I just like avoid it altogether. So, yeah. Anyway, I think we could do a whole different episode on this topic. But something you said, Sonia, about blocking off, you know, time, it sort of made me realize, as you both have attended our dialogue nights in person here at the center before the pandemic. And I was, you know, just thinking about it a lot lately as we are thinking about going back in person at some point. And maybe that's why those events are so meaningful, because, you know, it's a blocked off time where people leave their stuff at the door, you know, and really intentionally, as you said earlier, Cam, engage with another person. And so they sort of get to experience the full scope of what a dialogue can be like and feel like. And so sort of relating to that, because you've both been in our events, both in person and virtual, and what have you learned about dialogue through coming to the center, and how has that maybe impacted the way you've engaged in your own conversations outside of dialogue nights? And any learnings from it, I would love to hear.
I can share that dialogue nights is such a great example of blocking off time on your calendar. Thanks for saying that, Lillian. And well, I must say that the dialogues I have been a part of at the Keda Center, they are so deep yet so diffusing in the process. And I'll unpack that a little bit. Or I'll unpack that right now. What I mean is that, you know, in this hour and a half long dialogue event, which is one of the events that Ikeda Center organizes, you know, at the beginning, I'm talking about my favorite food with total strangers. And in the next 30 minutes, I'm sharing about my deepest struggles with someone I just like met. So that's what I mean, that they're so diffusing and they get so deep. And it's not that I've been pushed to share my deep struggles. It's just how it naturally unfolds. And that is something, I would say, that says a lot about the power of dialogue in fostering connections. It always doesn't need to be, and this is a note to self, it doesn't need to be a 6-hour long conversation. It could be a brief exchange where we talk about something that connects us at a fundamental level. As simple as food, as simple as anything else, picnic in the park. And this also reflects Mr. Daisaku Ikeda's philosophy and ideas around dialogue, which is to find the common human things that we do to arrive at a mutual understanding. And I think that is what makes events at the Ikeda Center also so powerful in fostering that connection, in me feeling comfortable sharing what I want to share with others. And that is something definitely I have taken away to implement in other aspects of my life, be it at work. You know, we usually, when it comes to teaching, we talk about how can we foster a sense of inclusivity in the classroom, especially when we have to spend an entire semester with each other. And I try to begin each semester, you know, the first class session, I try for it to be fun and light. I usually have an icebreaker that helps students just share who they are and hopefully find some connections. So I definitely have taken that structure into my work. And hopefully my students have found it helpful as well.
So echo your sentiments, Saloni. Thank you for sharing. I have been so uplifted and inspired by attending Dialogue Nights in person and virtual. There's something very special about the space that's carved out mutually by many different people to be like, all right, we are here to connect. We are here to come together and learn. I feel like what makes Dialogue Nights unique in my experience has been the feel, you know, there's something. So, you know, whatever word you like to use, energy, vibe, there's something so positive, palpable, hopeful that emanates from the people that are engaging in these Dialogue Nights that I have invariably felt like so energized afterwards and clearer and happy. So I think that comes from the components of being very well thought out and run, like the icebreakers, like you said, Saloni, the thoughtful discussion questions, and having that really high energy to back it all up. And there is something so powerful, yeah, about people coming together, blocking off that time, and being really intentional about it.
Thank you both. Oh, you're making me miss Dialogue Nights so much. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to be able to do them again in person, though I'm sure it will look so different now that we've gone through a pandemic together, and just the ways of engaging with each other has changed. And I definitely resonate so much with that feeling. You know, we always read that humans are like social beings, and yet there are times when I feel like that must not be true based on like how I'm feeling and how the world is. But then there is something, right, when you're in a space with another person and in an exchange, you feel revitalized. So I was at the post office the other day, and just what you shared, Saloni, reminded me of taking what we learned in Dialogue Nights outside. And I was in line, and there was two women behind me, and one of them had a big box, and we were all standing sort of close to each other. And I looked over, and she had the most beautiful handwriting. And so I really wanted to say to her, your handwriting is so beautiful. But then I was like, this is weird. We have masks on, you know. But then just remembering again of like just the power of connecting and being with each other, and that this is the one moment, you know, Mr. Kate always says, it's like, this is the last moment you're going to be with this person. So I sort of just blurted out, like, your handwriting is so beautiful. And the moment I said that, the woman behind her said, oh my gosh, I was just thinking the same thing. So we all gathered around her box, and we had this discussion around this woman's handwriting. And I would have never known that I just thought the woman behind her was doing her own thing, but we were all sort of connecting. And so just like speaking out and sharing something created that opportunity for us to connect with each other.
And I feel like the best dialogues are the ones that are not strategized, where that was something that happened in the moment. You're just like, boom, spontaneous. I want to share this. And it just unfolded without any expectations.
Right. And it makes me kind of challenge myself a little bit more in those moments when I'm hesitating to say hello or form some kind of connection with another person. So true.
This May marked 50 years since Daisaku Ikeda met renowned British historian Arnold Toynbee for a series of dialogues spanning 40 hours across 10 days, culminating in the publication of the book Choose Life, which has since been translated into 30 languages. This encounter solidified Ikeda's commitment to dialogue as a force strong enough to lead humanity from war and hatred to peace and coexistence. From there, with the encouragement of Toynbee, Mr. Ikeda went on to engage in over 1,600 subsequent dialogues with academics, artists, and world leaders. In a message he sent to the center, Mr. Ikeda talked about the impact of that life-changing dialogue with Toynbee. He says, "Since my discussions with Dr. Toynbee, I have worked to build bridges of mutual understanding and respect among the world's different cultures and civilizations. As a citizen of our planet, I have traveled the world and done as much as my limited capacities would permit to contribute to a dialogue among civilizations. Through these efforts, I have been able to meet with representatives of diverse intellectual, cultural, and religious traditions. In the course of conducting these exchanges, I have gained a strong confidence in the rich reserves of goodness that are equally the possession of all people. I remain convinced that if we base ourselves on the kind of dialogue that awakens and brings forth that inherent goodness, mutual understanding is possible and a path toward a resolution of the most challenging issues can be found." Cam, Saloni, and I read this together, and I asked them what they feel is required to have this kind of dialogue that brings forth each person's inherent goodness and creates mutual understanding.
This question reminds me of, I think, one of the blogs or articles on Ikeda Center's website where the author is discussing Mr. Daisaku Ikeda's just philosophy and ideas. And there's one point made around how such kind of dialogue also involves an understanding of your own inherent goodness. And I resonate with that a lot. I think that this kind of dialogue, where the goal is to create a mutual understanding, definitely involves a deep awareness of the value that my own life holds. And this probably is coming from my own experiences of engaging in dialogue, where sometimes what I am trying to do is prove my point or just put my point across without even considering what the other party is saying. And in me understanding that the other party's point is also valid involves that I understand that my value or the value attached to my life does not decrease if I agree with someone else or if I acknowledge their point of view. And this is something I'm not saying I'm perfect at it. This is something I am trying to work on as well. And going back to the experience I shared before around having conversations with my family, I think that is one place where it comes across so much, because I just feel that there is some part of it is, of course, seeking validation. And not to say that that's entirely wrong. I really am close to my family. Their opinions matters a lot. But is it to the extent that I lose my identity as my and my opinions and my way of thinking? I'm still trying to work on mutual understanding when it comes to difficult topics. But this is something I've realized, that I'm just so focused on proving my point that I'm unable to connect with them at a level that creates mutual understanding. Because I think that's there. The mutual understanding part is there. It's just a matter of me bringing it forth. And I take that upon myself, because I think it is to an extent my responsibility to express myself and also make them feel comfortable in expressing.
Yeah, you're putting words to many things that I've experienced that I haven't been able to understand fully. And hearing you speak helps me understand my own struggles, Saloni. I'm reflecting on a conversation that I had with a friend of mine where there was something we very clearly disagreed on. And he had his perspective, I have my perspective. And as soon as he started talking, like I knew like our perspectives were very different. And we only had like 20 minutes or so. So it goes back to, you know, that shared struggle of like, oh man, dialogue's hard when there's time constraints, but not impossible. And in that conversation, I was mainly seeking to get my points across and wasn't really trying to understand him because I thought that I already did. And that led to him being frustrated with me and being very defensive. So it did not lead to mutual understanding. I know that. And I think the takeaways for me from that conversation are, one, that seeking to understand someone else and not jumping in with my own perspective, especially initially, does not mean that I am being passive or that I'm being weak or that I'm masking a part of my identity like you're sharing, Saloni. It is a way of providing a foundation for a fruitful exchange. And the other piece that I want to keep in mind, note to self, is how things take time to develop. And in that conversation with my friend, it's not about ending after that 20 minutes with him being like, you know what, Cam, I think you're right. Or, you know, him being like, hey, you know what, I think you're right. But rather, maybe it's a very slight shift on both of our ends and the ways that we're understanding each other. And then the next time we have our dialogue, we can continue. But it's a ongoing process. And having that patience, for me, I think will be really helpful to not be hasty and trying to change the way someone else thinks or assume that I know the way that someone else thinks.
Wow, thanks for sharing that, Cam. That also made me think about something that I thought at some point because I've noted it down. It is around power and authority. You know, Cam, your experience with your friend. I'm assuming you and your friend were at the same level of power, or there was like less power dynamic versus when there's a clear power difference. For example, in me, say, engaging with my parents or me engaging with someone who clearly has more power than me, formally, informally, socially. I'm trying to think, how does dialogue look, or how might we create a mutual understanding in those situations? Because when I think of authority, when I think of power, especially if I am not in the position of power, I think of submission. I think of accepting what the other person is saying than engaging and exchanging ideas. And maybe this is just me. But yeah, I would love to hear from you, Cam, if you have any thoughts on that or if you have experiences around power and dialogue.
Yeah, in terms of the power dynamic, Saloni, I really appreciate you bringing that up because it's making me think more deeply about dialogue in different settings. And what comes to mind for me is in a work setting with a boss, because a boss has power. And I've had a few bosses in the past that have been really challenging. And I find that I am so much more reluctant to really share how I feel, or maybe even challenge a point that they have out respectfully, because there's so much fear that I have in me of being judged, of being rejected, of being seen as incompetent or disrespectful, all these things. And I experience that as well when I engage with friends that are on a similar power level. There's always this fear I have of being rejected, of not being liked, of someone stopping being my friend based on me sharing that there's something that they said that I don't agree with. So that's always something I struggle with. And I think that's exacerbated in a work setting where someone has authority over me. Yeah.
Thanks, Cam, for sharing that, because that also made me think about how I behave when I am in the position of power. And an example I can think of when I'm in the classroom, I clearly have more power than my students do. And sometimes that can act as a barrier because my students might not feel comfortable in asking me questions or in confronting me when I say something that's inaccurate. And I think my part towards engaging in dialogue, or at least fostering an inclusive and engaging environment in classroom, has been acknowledging that even though I am their professor in the classroom, there are things that I may not know. And in me openly acknowledging that, I think that opens the door to them seeing me as a human. At least that has been my experience with some of the student interactions I've had. And say someone asked me a question, and if I don't know the answer to that, I'm not going to make anything up just because I think I am in a position where I have power because of my knowledge.
Wow, thank you both so much. Oh my goodness, we've covered so much more than I ever could have asked for. I was thinking that I would ask you both, you know, in thinking about just our world right now, like there's so many things happening, right? I mean, in the last week, we've had multiple shootings and just so many things that where people are really suffering. Based on our conversation today, if people could have more dialogue like the ones we're talking about or wanting to have more of, how do you think our society would look different? You know, like, what do you think would change positively? You know, because Mr. Ikeda says dialogue is, he believes, the surest path to peace. And so if I think about what we just discussed, even with loving ourselves more or just challenging our own tendencies, like, how would our society look different? How do you think our society would look different?
I love this question. And when I was thinking about it before, it was amazing the network of impact that having dialogue can have. You know, I'm in the field of mental health, and I mean, engaging in spaces where I know someone cares about me and tries to understand me leads to an infinite amount of benefits. I feel happier. I feel more connected. I feel more confident. I feel alive. It gives me energy. I can put this energy into my work. I can put it into working out. I can put it into other relationships in my life. And it's just a ripple effect outwards in so many ways that I think is so powerful. So I think our society would be more happy, more peaceful. I think we are living through not just a COVID-19 pandemic, but also a pandemic of anxiety. And I think it would lower anxiety and feelings of loneliness. And a peaceful society is comprised of peaceful people. And in order for me to be peaceful, I need to have strong connections. And in order to have strong connections, I need to engage in dialogue.
I would just, each word that Kat said, it's so on point. And probably to add to that, if we truly could engage in this kind of dialogue, I see there being so much respect for each other in our society, which I think is lacking right now. And I'm honestly of the opinion that a person cannot be best friends with every person on this earth. And it is just how, it is much more complex than just engaging in dialogue. It's how we work and we as a society work. But I think that respect, it's regardless of whether I am best friends with someone, whether I care for someone, or whether I love for someone. If I can have respect for a person I do not even know. And that should be basic. Even if their ideas differ from me. And maybe we need to clarify what respect means as a society. Or I should say, we as a society need to clarify what respect means. It may not mean agreeing with each other. I think this idea of agreeing to disagree is, I've heard so much about it. I sometimes try to practice it. It's totally difficult. But maybe we need to think more about it. What it means to agree to disagree. What role does respect play in forming this kind of society where we can all peacefully coexist? We all can become happy while also leading our individual lives. We are all entitled to our own opinions. I think it's healthy to have different opinions, but how is that impacting our relationships with each other? Is that leading to a sense of diversity? Or is that leading to me thinking that other people do not deserve to live because they have a different identity, because they have a different set of ideas, or because they look different?
Thank you both so much. That was just the perfect way to wrap up our conversation today. And I would love to send that to Mr. Ikeda. I think it just captures like so much of his own philosophy and approach to dialogue. And so thank you both so much for joining us today. I think we could probably talk for another hour. I just want to really appreciate you both for your time.
Thank you for having us. And I truly enjoyed our conversation today. Thank you, Cam, for being this thought partner. I definitely learned a lot more about myself and my vision for engaging in dialogue. So thank you for having me.
I'm so honored to be in this space with you all. Took away so much from this conversation and have so many ideas and energy to put forth ways that I want to engage in dialogue in my life and things that I've been avoiding. So this is such a great cause for me to engage more intentionally in dialogue in my life. And like I said before about the Ikeda Dialogue Nights, I leave feeling so much energy, connection to heart, and gratitude. Y'all rock. Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed my dialogue with Cam and Saloni. I learned so much, and I'm actually feeling excited to go out and talk to more people. There are definitely a few things I want to reflect on more and take with me into future dialogues. First is that dialogue and self-growth go hand in hand, and that dialogue with good friends can actually assist us in our process of self-improvement and self-love, because often others can see things in us that we can't see ourselves. Second is this idea that to see the inherent goodness in others, we have to see the inherent goodness in our own life. This really blew me away and made me realize that when I'm really struggling to talk with someone, it's often not really because of the other person, but rather a lack of confidence in my own life. Finally, I really feel I deepen my conviction in the power of dialogue to create peace through this conversation with Cam and Saloni. Cam put it so beautifully when he said, "A peaceful society is comprised of peaceful people, and in order for me to be peaceful, I need to have strong connections. And in order to have strong connections, I need to engage in dialogue." So thank you for tuning in to the Dialogue Studio today. Stay tuned for our next episode, where actually my colleagues Henri and Priyandra will join me once again. And if you're interested in learning more about the Ikeda Center for Peace Learning and Dialogue, you can visit our website at ikedacenter.org or follow us on social media at Ikeda Center.
Also, don't forget to email us at podcast@ikedacenter.org if you have any questions or would like to share any of your dialogue stories with us. We'd love to hear from you. And with that, thank you everyone, and happy dialoguing.